Distraction. Welcome back. Apologies, we were away for 2 weeks. Ben and I. Let me turn on the camera. Jeff Sachs here from Web Yeshiva. I like to, from time to time, show around the room, the crowd around the table. There's Ben. Wave, Ben. Ben and I were in Portugal last week. And here's everybody else. I think we're down a few men tonight. Series and a couple others. But here we are in Mishkan Tzipora, continuing our study of Masechet Kiddushin. The microphone's not plugged in because it's a long story. Somebody was supposed to bring an extension cord. The microphone only works if the computer is plugged in. Here we are on Daf Mem Gimel Omid Beis, 43B. We're starting a new sugya. Ha'ish Mekadesh Et Bito. A father can, you see where we are? We're about, I don't know, 10 lines from the bottom, two dots. A father can betroth his daughter to another man. You understand, he can't marry his own daughter. It occurred to me, as I was walking up here tonight, mildly unprepared, underprepared, I should say, not unprepared. No teacher is ever unprepared, but sometimes we are underprepared. What's strange about that line in the Mishnah? Ha'ish Mekadesh Et Bito.
President Av.
It should be Ha'av Mekadesh Et Bito. So what? Why do you?
I would think to distinguish that a mother can't be Mekadesh Et Bito. We might think, why not?
No, but it said Ha'av Mekadesh Et Bito. It would also be to the exclusion of the mother.
Yeah, but if there's no father, so it would be somebody else who's in charge. I mean,
I doubt very highly that the Gemara would have entertained the idea that the mother could be the agent to cause.
But it would mean, by saying Aish, it means like whoever is the head of the household at that time, whether that's her biological.
Which is never the mother. In the times of Chazal, the mother is never the head of the household.
Like the father died to be married, so you would say.
Oh, nice. So as Ha'ish Mekadesh Et Bito, it indicates an even stronger biological connection, father daughter, than saying Ha'av Mekadesh Et Bito.
No.
Hold on a second. That's what you're saying.
Whoever is the head of the household at that time, whether that's her biological father or uncle or grandfather.
But that's not the case.
It says, could you translate it as Ha'ish, as the Ha'ish being the husband of the woman, who is not necessarily the father of the daughter for various reasons?
Oh. That happens not to be the case.
No.
That happens not to be the case. Here, Ha'ish Mekadesh Et Bito means the biological father of the girl, as will become very apparent momentarily in the Gemara. The biological father of the girl can betroth her while she is still a minor.
I think just the Mishnah gives us a more simple answer. It's just the pattern. Ha'ish Mekadesh both lo'cho, Ha'ish Mekadesh.
I think David has, as always, observed the probably the correct answer. It just has to do with the literary structure of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is just creating a literary parallelism, right? Ha'ish, discussing now for already very many weeks, the man can be Mekadesh, the woman he himself wants to marry, either himself or through a shaliach. And that word shlucho has basically been what's occupied us now for, I don't know, when did we start learning Kedushin? In January, right? February. A couple months. Ha'isha mitkadeshet bo b'shlucha. And then the woman can accept the Kedushin either herself or through an agent. And then the Mishnah goes on, Ha'ish mekadeshet bito keshe hi na'ara. When a girl is a na'ara, remember there are three stages in the development of a woman. There's a ketana, a minor girl up until the age of 12, a bogeret, an adult girl, and there's this little narrow window of about 6 months from the age of 12, from bat mitzvah, until 12 and a half. where for certain purposes, she's called a ne'ara, which might be translated as a maiden. Would that be fair? Right? Where for certain purposes, you know, everybody's had a bat mitzvah in the family. For a daughter, for a granddaughter, for somebody. But we've also had bar mitzvahs. You know, this myth that you're an adult at a bar or bat mitzvah is very clear. But halakha creates this intermediate stage for a young woman, what we call a young woman, a na'ara, is a 6-month period after the bat mitzvah in which we say that for certain purposes she's an adult. For chiyuv and mitzvot, generally speaking, she's an adult. But for other purposes, she's still under the thumb of her father. Like, yes, we saw it in Nedarim as well, in terms of a father has certain rights over the Nedarim of his children, of his wife, etc. If a child or if a wife makes a Neder, the father has the right to cancel it outright. Because he has certain interests, financial interests and other interests as the head of the family in either ratifying or canceling out the Nedarim, the vows that a member of his household makes. When somebody makes a vow to give $100,000 to tzedakah, the guy that manages the bank account, which again, in the times of Chazal, was always the father, he might have something to say about that.
Is that child to include a son, and is that son under bar mitzvah or over
bar mitzvah? No, under bar mitzvah. So for a boy, there's a very clear line of demarcation. Bar mitzvah is the line. For a girl, for certain purposes, there's this 6-month intermediate period called ne'ara. It might have to do something with the markers of puberty and maturation, and since a woman entering marriage, her ability to be a bearer of children is not without significance. But
is a neder taken by an under bar mitzvah boy or under bar mitzvah girl bichlal valid?
It's valid for certain purposes, but for a girl, we say that while she's still in the era, she's under her father's jurisdiction for nedarim and for his ability to marry her off, which he can't do if she's an adult. You have adult daughters. You'd like to see some of them get married.
Like to marry them off, yeah.
Not your 14-year-old. Not yet, right? But, you know, imagine you came home and said, like Tevye. He comes home and says, Mazel Tov, Huddle, we found your husband Laser Wolf the Butcher. Imagine if you tried doing that. How would that go over?
Imagine finding a Laser Wolf this day.
These days, if you can find a Laser Wolf, you should snatch him up. So ha'ish mekadesh et bito. So Gemara says hatznan hatam. The Mishnah says this is a Mishnah later on in our Masechta Daf Samech something or other. Ne'ara ha'mi'urasa, he v'aviha mekablinet gita. A ne'ara mi'urasa is a girl in this 12-month period. I'm sorry, 12 years. 6-month period. I told you we drank a lot of port last week in Portugal. It's very strong. Right. Here's a parenthesis. What is port wine? I mean, it's not fair. You know what it is. You drank it all.
Oh, the
no, port like champagne. Champagne is bubbly wine that's made in the Champagne region. If you make bubbly wine in New York State, it can't be labeled as champagne. Port is this wine that's made in the Douro Valley, this river that flows east to west in northern Portugal, leading out to Porto. The whole country is called Portugal because of this city Porto, which is the second largest city. Porto means port. So they take wine. Before it's reached full fermentation, meaning before it's fully alcoholic, it's more than grape juice. They abbreviate the fermentation process by adding in brandy, basically, which is very high in alcoholic concentration. So, what?
That brandy is distilled.
Brandy is distilled. So in the end, you're left with a very sweet wine because the fermentation on the wine itself hasn't yet eaten up all the sugar, and very high in alcohol because you supplement it with the brandy. So it's a very high alcoholic. It's like 18%, right? Wine is generally like 11, 12, 13%. Right. And this is high alcohol and it's thick and sweet.
It's not as sweet as the Kiddush.
No, it's not like Shapiro's, the wine you can cut with a knife. But, yeah. So that's port wine. So anyway, we drank a lot of it. So if I make a slip of the tongue, forgive me. So the Ne'ara, a girl between 12 and 12 and a half, who's mi'ureset, meaning she's halachically engaged, but not yet fully married. Remember, the times of Chazal, there was a break between what we do today at a wedding, where everything happens under the chuppah. You would have kiddushin. He gives the ring. This is hariat mikudeshet li. That's called erusin. Kiddushin, erusin are synonyms. And then later they would do nisuin and be fully married. So after erusin, if you want to call it off, it's not like, you know, like today, if a couple, you hear about such things, a couple breaks an engagement. Breaking an engagement has no real halachic stuff. Our engagement, where he gives her the ring and he takes the picture and posts it on Facebook, that doesn't have real halachic status. The only halachic matter for that is like there's certain dine mamonos about who paid for what, about returning the ring. If there was a down payment on the simcha hall, who has to pay for that, you know, based upon who broke the engagement, etc. But the actual relationship has no halachic status.
The tnaim, that is not a common sign for the wedding, right before the wedding, right?
But
it also used to be a year before.
Right.
But then because of the same way that the Erosin, they moved up Erosin to right before the chuppah because they didn't want this Erosin state. They moved up the tnaim before the chuppah to be right before the state. So it wouldn't surprise me if at some point down the line they'll say,
well, if
you can't even have the engagement party until
right
before
ever, if you've ever read the tnaim or been a witness on the tnaim, which we do today really only because it's ridiculous.
You only do it so you get two more honors to parcel out to people to sign to be the edim on the tanoim, and maybe one person to read it. What does it say? It says, the father, the bride, the father, the groom agree that in such and such a date, such and such a place, our kids are going to get married. You're already there. You're already, it's happening in 10 minutes. And who would pay for what? And et cetera. All of this has been agreed to and already, forget it, agreed to. It's already all been paid. So tnan hatam, ne'araha mirasa, heva avia mekablinet ita. So after she's already halachically engaged in this 6-month period, if they decide they're getting divorced, how does that work? Meaning she became engaged because her father married her. And now the husband wants her. Who accepts the get? The father can accept. Who accepts the get? So the Mishnah says, he va'aviyah mikamon. They do it together. Father and daughter together. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, but Rabbi Yehuda says, Ein shtei yadayim zochot ke'echad. Can't be. Because how does a get work? The husband, v'natan biyada, says the Pasuk in Kitetse. He has to put it in her hand. Has anybody ever witnessed the delivery of the get?
Yeah.
Right? So there's a whole procedure by which the betin operates. It's not just, you know, some kind of formalistic court case. There's a whole ceremony, a whole tekes that takes place where they stand up before the betin and the get is written. It takes a while to write the get, which is a kind of process by which, you know, we make people sit and cool their heels because maybe they'll have a charot at the last minute. So, and then the witnesses sign the get and then they read it out loud. And of course, there are all many details about how the get has to be written, and then he takes it, and it's folded in a certain way, and he hands it, she cups her hands like this to show that it's an act of receiving the get, and then she takes it, she waves it around, she walks around the room, you know, with it in her hand to show that she's accepted it, and the whole thing has to be written. Yeah. Hare zegiteich, this is your get. Right. Well, that's in the nusach of the He says that you are now released and you can go off and marry whatever. So that act of receiving the get, which causes the severance of the marital bond. I remember, I think I must have said this at some point in the past, that I was once a witness on I was once a witness at a get. And it was very, very much around the time that our father-in-law, Zichron Levracha, passed away. And I had, I don't know if it was a privilege, but I had the experience of being in the room at the moment that our father-in-law passed away, Zichron Levracha. And I remember thinking at both of these, you know, I had never experienced either such thing. But I remember thinking that, like, there's, you know, you talk about metaphysics, that there are spiritual forces in the world. I mean, it happens at weddings also in a much happier way, of course. I thought this under the chuppah in December when my son got married. And a second before, it's boy and girl. And a moment later, after Hariat Mekudeshet Li, there's a mystical bond. It's halachic. It's a halachic bond. But it's a mystical bond that's formed between these two people. You can't see it. They look exactly the same as they did a second before. Here's a person on his deathbed. One minute he's in bad shape, but he's still alive and he's still with us. And the next minute, the body is the same, but he's gone. And it's not just that the line on the monitor goes flat, right? There's something metaphysical that's happened. And the same thing with the get, in the opposite way. A moment before, they're husband and wife. At that last second, they change their mind. They go home and live happily ever after. But he puts it into her, the minute he puts it into her hand, that mystical bond is severed. It's like a remarkable thing to experience. So that act of putting it in her hand is what creates the kritut, the divorce. So Rabbi Yehuda says, it can't be that father and daughter accept the get at the same moment. Because the very act which causes the divorce, which creates, which severs the bond, is one person, she accepting it, or her shaliach accepting it. But two people two people, there's certain things that can't be done, two people at once. That's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion.
I'm not read. Is there any opinion of perhaps the father and daughter accept means it can be the father daughter without being the father being the shaliach?
That's not Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Rabbi Yehuda says that the Rabbonin think that they do it together. And Rabbi Yehuda says that can't do it. Ella, avia mikabelet kita. What?
No. Is there such an opinion?
Not that I'm aware of. And Rabbi Yehuda says no. The father accepts the get on her behalf. V'kol she'en yecholah lishmor et kita, en yecholah lehitgarish. And any girl, a na'ara ktana, who's been married, you know, this happened. We must stipulate, of course, at this point, that there are all types of things about these descriptions of marriage and divorce of young girls, which today seem to us at best bizarre and at worst abusive. Criminal. What?
Criminal.
Today they'd be criminal, right? But beyond criminal, they would be immoral. And I just must stipulate that here, you know, beyond the kind of standard explanations of in the pre-modern time and the economics, it was sometimes in a girl's best interests, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I don't have an easy answer to this, but we must acknowledge it and yet still learn the Gemara.
Also, it's quite possible that such betrothals weren't meant to lead to an nisuin. In a short time frame, it would be that the control.
Maybe.
Is several years away.
Of course, as a legal text, it makes a little difference. In other words, the Gemara is not moralizing here. Gemara is examining abstract halachic legal ideas. A girl in this situation, at that point, at this age, how is marriage contracted and how is it exited from, and et cetera. It's not just like the halacha is not. Not dealing with all types of other moral, in agadic passages, it will. But, you know, just like Gemara will, you said you're learning Makos, right? Just like the Gemara doesn't really deal with the ethics of murder when addressing the halachic matters, which, by the way, just like the U.S. Penal Code doesn't address matters of morals and ethics when addressing matters of murder and stealing. And
I know the Gemara can spend pages and pages talking about Ben Sarum, or and then says, oh, it never happens.
So Amar Reish Lakish, kimachloket legerushin, kach machloket lekidushin. So just like there's a machloket regarding divorce, is the same machloket regarding marriage. Right? In other words, how is the marriage affected going out? How is the divorce created? How is the marriage created? Rabbi Yochanan Amar, machloket legerushin. What's the machloket about how divorce comes about? Rabbi Yochanan says there is a machloket about how the gerushin takes place, whether she accepts it, whether they accept it together or only the father can accept it. That's the machloket regarding divorce. Aval lekidushin, divrei hakol. Everyone agrees for marriage, aviha velohi.
Of a nara.
Yeah, no, so for a bogeret, obviously she could do it alone. But for a minor girl or for a nara, so there, Rabbi Yochanan says for kiddushin, everyone agrees that the father initiates the marriage, right? And not her. V'omar Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, my time at Rabbi Yochanan. Why does Rabbi Yochanan say this? Why does Rabbi Yochanan say that? In creating the marriage of a ne'ara, of a young girl, not an adult girl, that everyone agrees the father does it. Aliba dera gerushin, but gerushin de mechaneset atzma lirushut aviha. When a minor girl gets divorced, what happens to her?
She
returns to the halachic jurisdiction of her father. Bein hi uvein aviha. Whether she accepts the divorce or whether her father accepts the divorce, she goes back to the rishut of her father, meaning all of her financial transactions are subject to her father. Her nedarim are subject to her father. This we did learn this sugya. Because when she gets married, her nidarim become the privilege of her husband. When did we learn nidarim?
Before
Corona. Before Tanit.
Before
Megillah.
Because we did Megillah.
Oh, wow. Been a while. So Kol HaKavod, that we remember it.
There's the port.
Well,
the port helped you.
The port is good for the memory. Correct. If she's an adult woman who gets divorced.
No, she can still be in the engagement. She's not married. She's engaged.
Correct.
She can be 14,
15. Yeah, but in other words, if she's 14 or 15, she's already an adult. And if she gets divorced, she's her own agent. She doesn't go back to her father.
And she also accepts the
get. And everyone agrees that a girl over 12 and a half accepts her own get, and her father cannot accept the get on her behalf.
When you talk about Mekadesh, you said previously that the father initiates.
Well,
isn't that the husband that initiates?
You're correct. The father accepts the kiddushin on her behalf.
Right, because it's a weird thing to say Mekadesh.
Because he's not correct.
You imagine they use a different verb because he is being active, but you're saying he's just passive.
Right, well, how would you say that? We say that a woman is mikudeshet, right. And the father is doing an active act which results in a passive reality.
So you have the word lechaten.
Lechaten, yeah. But that's not a chazal.
It's a biblical word.
Yeah, but it's not a chazal word.
No, but I'm saying, when you have the biblical word lechaten means to marry off your daughter. It doesn't mean to get married, like it doesn't matter.
Right.
So it was weird, you know, like he says it says something about like Shlomo and Paro. you know, or mitzvahim or whatever. Like they think it sounds weird. They marry each other, but they just marry their daughters.
Right.
And so, well, you know,
I had the odd experience a number of years ago being able to say I married my sister, meaning I performed the wedding at my sister's wedding. Yes, we could imagine a different verb, but they're homonyms. Or they're not really homonyms. It's one word that has double meanings.
No, it's a homonym.
A homonym is homonym are two different words that sound alike.
Oh no, you're right. That's a homophone now.
A homophone. No, but these aren't homonyms. So this is one word. It's the same word.
When we were growing up, homonyms were two different words that sounded alike and had different meanings. Now they call that a homophone, and a homonym has become what we used to call a heteronym, which is really whack.
So today, a homonym is the same word with
single word
with different meanings.
Different pronunciations with different meanings.
But here it's the same pronunciation. It's the same word as the same shorish, does it? But it just it's used in two different contexts. I mean, different things depending on who's doing the action. Who's doing the action?
With both words.
So with Gerushin, the girl re-enters on her own into the Reshut Aviha, into her father's domain. Bainhi Bain Aviha. Kiddushin, however, in terms of marriage, the assumption here being that having her back home is in the father's interest. It's something that he wants. Right? Most of us, you know, our kids move out. We don't want them. It's nice they come for Yontif, but we don't want to move them back in.
What's the assumption?
Why is what the assumption?
Why is the assumption that it's her best
interest? And then does it may or may not be in her best interest, but the father's interest in having her. In other words, she can't remove herself. A girl cannot accept Kiddushin on her own before she's an adult, because she's removing herself from her father's jurisdiction, which he needs to assent to.
Okay.
She can't do it on her own.
Right. But the way you put it before, that the father is interested in having her and has their food, as opposed to marrying.
Well, yeah, look at Mary here, the last three lines. Kiddushin de mafka'at atzma mirushut aviha. But getting married, which removes her from the father's domain. Aviha velohi. It's the father's right to agree to it or not, and not hers. Vahare. So now the Gemara says, oh yeah, is this true? Is there never a case where a ne'ara, before she's an adult, once she's an adult, she can do whatever she wants. Right? My 11 3/4-year-old, you know, already knows this, that she's the boss. Even before she's a ne'ara, she's still a katana. Right? But, and kal v'chomer, my 22-year-old. But is there never a case where a ne'ara can choose for herself?
Oh.
What? You learned ahead. Vahare me'amar. Me'amar means, look at Rashi, the last Rashi on the page. Me'amar, kiddushei yavam b'yivimto kruyim me'amar. It's not me'amar like an article or me'amar a statement. Me'amar is a rabbinic nickname for the marriage of a yavam and a yavama. And you know what the ibum is. Rachel's married to Reuven. They have no children. Reuven dies. We're coming up on Shavuos. We'll talk about the Ibum Chalitza, etc. in Megillat Ruth. But this is not exactly Chazal's Ibum Chalitza, but it's a source. Rachel is now a childless widow. The brother of Reuven, let's call him Shimon, is the Yavam. He has to perform Yibum, what's called in English Leverite marriage. If he doesn't want to marry her, or if she doesn't want to marry him, they do chalitza, which releases, you know, the ceremony with this funny shoe and the spitting and the etc. It's not so common today, but it happens.
It happens.
Two people who were involved in it.
No, I mean, we might all know at least one person who knows.
One online and a frustrated person.
But it's thankfully rare because...
Each other.
Yeah, but because...
Remember, the Vadia Yosef is a result of the debunk.
Brother Vadia Yosef was
a result of it.
I don't know. In our days, Yibum is exceedingly rare and is actually discouraged. If it exists, it exists only in the Sephardic world. Ashkenazim Yibum is, I think, unheard of from the medieval era on. Interestingly, in Portugal, we met someone in Portugal, the fellow who's in charge of the Kashrut and everything in Lisbon is the son of one of the previous rabbis. There was one rabbi in Lisbon for 40 years. And his son is now he's not the rabbi, but he's in charge of a lot of Jewish life there. And he told his story of his family story on Friday night. He was a product of Yibum. His grandfather and his grandmother, his grandmother's parents had left Morocco and went to Brazil. And his grandfather's parents had gone to Lisbon. His grandmother had been married to his grandfather's brother in Brazil. The brother died. So she needed
chalitza.
She was a young girl. She was 18, 19 years old. She needed a chalitza. She was in Brazil. This was the beginning of the 20th century. He was in Lisbon. So in those days, the alternative is that she's an aguna of sorts, right? She can't get married to anyone else until chalitza is done. So she goes to Lisbon, which was probably no simple feat from Brazil in 19 whatever. She goes to Lisbon to get chalitza. But he looks very nice to her, and she looks nice to him, and they fall in love, and they get married. They do Yibum instead. And he is the product of that. So it happens, but it's pretty rare. So the case of this Leverit marriage, if she's a Na'ara Murasa, and her intended, who's already Mikudeshet to her, drops dead. So she has to have Yibum Achalitza. So ma'amar di mefka'at atzma mirushut aviha, that's a case of her. Basically, she's entering kiddushin on her own, and her father has no say in the matter. So wait a second. You told me a line ago there's no such thing as a na'ara entering marriage on her own, having agency over herself. No, there is a case. The case of Chalitza. Vitznan, turn to 44a. Yibum, I'm sorry.
But not really, because Yibum happens automatically.
You want to say that these are apples and oranges. These are two separate cases. You can't learn anything out from it. Okay, I hear that. Katana, she has the right to refuse the Yibum, but then she needs Chalitza.
Does she have the right? Because she's not allowed. And that's just the other way. Or says that right, fall back to her father. Because if I'm not married, if I'm an Alva,
yeah, I hear your question. I hear your question. Tznan ktana min ha'erusin eino sin ba ma'amar ela midat aviha. So the Brisa says that a ktana, right? A ktana. Who's widowed after the Erusin but before the Kiddushin. So she doesn't do Ma'amar. Elamidat Aviha. So she needs her father's okay, like you want to suggest. Vanara Bain Midat, that's. What did I say?
I don't know.
I meant Ibu. It's the same thing. Yes and no, because there is one essential difference between the marriage of a Yavam and a Yavama and a regular wedding. What is that? How is Isha Mikudeshet? Kesef Shtarubia. Yibum is only accomplished with Bia. Only with marital intercourse is the marriage bond formed through Yibum accomplished. Why might that be, by the way? Well, I mean, it's a pasuk, but why what might the whole point of Yibum is the continuation of the seed of the brother who's not, even though all marriage is procreation focused, Yibum has that added element of the point of this marriage is to bring to the world the child who was not born from the. And if you're interested in the mystical meanings of that, look at the Ramban on Yibum. So Yibum, the marriage that's formed through Yibum is only formed through marital relations, not. Correct. I mean, the Yavam, the brother who steps in, is really somehow reincarnating himself as his dead brother. He's just quite literally stepping into his dead brother's shoes and to his marital bed. So ela midata avia vanara bein midata tzma bein midata avia ma she'en kein bekidushin. In other words, if a ketana is widowed after the erusin, after she's halachically engaged, so the yavam, the brother-in-law of the dead husband, the brother of the dead husband, can do yibum only with the permission of the father. That's with a ketana, up to 12. But a ne'ara in this intermediate 6 months, so the yavam can do the yibum with her consent or with the father's consent. Because in that period, she's already half her own person. Right? Remember, what happens in a regular case? In a regular case of divorce?
Or yibum, or?
No, not yibum. In a regular case of divorce, a woman gets divorced. Mm-hmm. She goes back to being her own person, not her father's. So here she's already been married. She's already a widow at a tender young age. But since she's not yet 12 and a half, but will be sometime in the next 6 months and maybe even less. So for certain purposes, we say in that case, either the Yavam can marry her, can do Yibum with her, either with the permission of either the father or the girl. But that's not true for a regular case of Kiddushin of a Ne'ara. Right? With the regular case of a Kiddushin of a Ne'ara, you need the father's permission. But in this case, I mean, you don't need to be Sigmund Freud to imagine that this girl's been through a lot in her life. At the age of 12 and 3 months, she's already been married and widowed. And maybe she's mature enough to make her own decision.
Or you could say, to be less generous, the father already agreed to condition the first time.
The father already agreed that she could get married,
right.
So at least already, and not just that, but to this family.
And not just the family. In other words, if the Yavam is a continuation of the
Mavam, right. In other words, when the Yavam, when the brother comes along, he's coming along in place of the dead brother. So the father already agreed. That, right? This happens, by the way, in who did this happen to? Queen Mary. The King George, King George of our streets, King George V. The grandfather of our sovereign lady, Her Royal Highness Elizabeth II. Zichrona Levracha. So King George, after whom the street is named, was married to Queen Mary. But King George was not meant to be king. His older brother, the Prince of Wales, he wasn't the Prince of Wales. His older brother was the Prince of Wales. And Mary of Tech she must have had a lot of computers or something. Her name was Mary of Tech. Mary of Tech was engaged to, I'm forgetting what was his name. Must have been Edward or something. If it wasn't George, it was Edward. Was engaged to the older brother. You know, she was like online to become the next queen of England. But he died during the engagement. It's like a reverse evil, because the husband died. So she was already chosen to be the next queen of England. So they said, fine, instead of marrying that brother, you'll marry this brother. We've got plenty of them. So she was married to King George V. And she became the mother of, no, she became the mother of Edward, who abdicated his throne to marry the woman he loves, and George the VI, right, who was the father of Elizabeth II. What? Similar things probably came. Yeah, I mean, this probably happened. All the... Right. Right.
And there was a whole issue. That was one of the main issues between the Catholic Church and Roman VIII.
Right. Was he allowed to marry everybody else? Right, right. So anyway, so you see that this it still exists, you know, if you...
This statement in the Gemara, it makes it sound as if the evil can be done against her will.
Oh, and now, well, hold on to your seat, because it's even worse than that.
Why is that so much worse than being able to be married against her will?
Because there is nothing.
Oh, hold on a second. People online can't hear people across talking. So wait, finish saying what you're saying.
In the regular case of evil, you can't do, you know, if she were Bulgarian, okay, there's no such thing as against her will. Okay? Yibum has to be, you know, if she's not willing, then it's chalitza. And here it sounds like we don't care what she thinks.
Well, we're going to get to the case of Ma'amar Bal Korcha, of doing Yibum against her will, which means essentially. Sounds a lot like sexual relations against her will, which in our world we call rape.
Right.
It could be in our case that we're talking about was one brother that could do evil.
Yeah. So in other words, there are our case imagines isn't entertaining that idea, right? It's a little simpler. There's two. Which brother does the? Well, generally speaking, the oldest brother has first rights. Yes, I'm sorry, Vladimir, go ahead.
It says here, katana, min ha'erusin.
Yeah.
Okay? So.
Listen, the katana min ha'erusin, eino sin ba ma'amar ela midat avia. A girl under 12, you can't do yibam unless the father agrees. Everyone agrees that under 12, the father has exclusive rights.
Yeah. Exactly.
The father engaged her.
When she was a katana?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, no, no.
But there is also Kiddush Ketana, which is not full marriage. That's a different sugya, which I think we're going to get to. But there is such a, what? It's just rabbinic, but it for all intents and purposes, it creates marriage, right? If she later, she wants out of it, she can get out of it on her own. But there is such a thing as Kiddush Ketana. So a Ketana, who's in this position, everyone agrees the father is in charge and she has no say. In our case, however, of the Ne'ara, between 12 and 12 and a half, so Ne'ara min bein da'at atzma bein da'at avia, can be a father or her. Masha'en can be Kiddushin. But Kiddushin, she can enter the marriage only with the permission of her father. So the Gemara goes on, Ela I itmar hochi itmar. So the Gemara says, say it like this. Clarify what's going on here. Omar Rabbi Yossi, Bar Chanina, my time at Rabbi Yochanan, Aliba de Rabbanan. What's Rabbi Yochanan's rationale here? Remember, Rabbi Yochanan had said that with marriage, everyone agrees that the father has exclusive rights over an Ara. Right? Go back a few lines. That's what Rabbi Yochanan said. Rabbi Yochanan said that for an Ara, the father has exclusive rights, yes or no. So what is his reason? Because our Gemara had been trying to say, no, maybe there's a case where a Ne'ara can enter marriage on her own, this weird case of Yibum, right? So the Gemara is like understands that this case is unusual, that this is not a good example to rebut the general principle that for a Ne'ara, only the father is in charge.
Well, we had heard that a woman can't be married against her will.
Yeah.
I understand that also applies to Ara.
Not so clear. So Amar Rabbi Yosef bar Ella eat mar hoki itmar. Amar Rabbi Yosef bar Chanina, my time of Rabbi Yochanan alibad Rabbanan. So what is Rabbi Yochanan's reason that he says a na'ara until 12 and a half, the father is the only opinion that matters?
12 and a half
or 12? A na'ara is until 12 and a half. Until 12 and a half, the father is the only opinion that matters. In Kiddushin, in getting married. Kiddushin mida'ata aviha. I'm sorry. My time is Rabbi Yochanan Aliba de Rabbanan. Kiddushin dimida'ata aviha velohi. The Kiddushin is affected by the father and not her. Gerushin de balkorcha. Bein hi bein aviha. But divorce, you know, not today, not after the past 1,000 years, but in principle, divorce can be affected by the husband. The husband is in charge of divorce, and he doesn't need the wife's permission. Today, one of the takanot of Rabbeinu Gershom is you can't divorce your wife against her will. But the only way around that is this mechanism called the Heter Meir Rabbanim. Since technically the Torah does allow a husband to divorce his wife against her will, if the woman doesn't want, there are cases, they're a lot rarer in this direction, but there are cases of men who are agunim, right? Oh yeah, what's that? I thought they got divorced.
No, it was a case. He did get the
possibility. He's remarried already. Yeah, yeah.
I think
he got married before she had.
I don't know. I don't follow Shirley Rand, but in other words, in principle, after the Takana of Rabbeinu Gershom, around the year 1000, a husband cannot divorce his wife against her will. So if she doesn't want the divorce, he's as stuck as she is if he doesn't want to give her a divorce. However, since technically. He is allowed to do it, right? Allowed to divorce her against her will. By Torah law, he's allowed to divorce her against her will.
As opposed to having multiple stuff, which is also what the Fair and Vinegar should also do.
So, right? So we have this device of the Heter Meir Rabbonim. If you get 100 rabbis, not a rabbi like me, like a serious rabbi, you get 100 serious rabbis to agree, that can override the... Because if the woman doesn't want the divorce, no, that's more problematic. Heter Meir Rabbanim might allow him to have to, but not to divorce. You can't divorce a woman who's not compos mentis. She has to. You can divorce her against her will, but she has to know what's happening. But since technically Torah also allows for polygamy, a man can have more than one wife. See, Father Jacob, right? So since technically a husband can have more than one wife, so what would have happened? Rabbeinu Gershom says you can't divorce your wife against her will. So he says, fine, she doesn't want the divorce, she doesn't have to have it. But I'm allowed to have another wife. So I'm going to go marry the woman I want. She'll still technically, for the IRS, she's still technically my wife, but I'm allowed to have another wife. So when Rabbeinu Gershom made this takana against polygamy, in Ashkenaz, polygamy was unheard of. Polygamy had not been practiced neither amongst Christians nor among Jews for centuries. Why make a takana against something that doesn't exist?
Because the purpose of the takana was not to divorce against.
Yeah, so these two takanot are linked. In other words, the real takana is against divorcing your wife against her will. The problem is when you make that takana, there's a loophole. So closing off polygamy closes the loophole. It wasn't because polygamy was a real issue in Ashkenaz in the year 1000, right? But unless you close that loophole, the takana against divorcing your wife against her will has no teeth. Because it had gone out of fashion. But perhaps the influence of Christian Europe, where polygamy, Christianity had always gone against, but Christianity is ambivalent against having one wife. let alone two. No doubt it was the influence of Christian Europe. Right, in amongst Sfaradim, in some Sephardic lands, polygamy was still practiced up until the 20th century, but it was always quite rare. You know, there were never usually that many. Most people had enough trouble supporting one wife, let alone two.
That's the joke. Now, it's like setting up for pure family worth, because how can one wife possibly support one colon?
In Islam, is it prevalent or it exists?
Yes, yeah.
How prevalent is it in Islam today? I don't know. But yeah, polygamy also only works when you have a real population imbalance between men and women. In societies where many, many men killed in war, etc. So use it. But in a world where it's really 50-50, first of all, if everybody's getting married. Anyway, we'll pause here. I wish everyone a Chag Shavuot Matan Torah Sameach, and we'll continue next week.
Thank you.
I'll just add, of course, the other famous takana of Rabbeinu Gershom is... Now, we always say it's not reading people's mail. That's not precise.
Email.
It's not reading, no, meaning it's not invading somebody's privacy by reading their papers, you know, by reading, you know, it's like, what's, it's the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, people can be secure. What is the line in the
Fourth?
The Fourth Amendment? Secure in their papers. Meaning the idea that somebody can't come into your home or your office and just rifle through your filing cabinet and read your private papers, your correspondence, your contracts, your deeds, your things like that. There's a certain zone of privacy which a person is entitled to, and the Constitution fixed it in papers. Today, there are questions about how does it extend in the electronic and digital age. Now, this, I always say, this takana is a tragedy. Why did Rabbeinu Gershom have to make a takana against reading people's mail?
People are doing it.
Because it's a perfect example of hyper-legalization. Anybody that knows, where in the Torah does it say you can't read anybody's mail? It doesn't. Where in the Gemara does it say you can't read anybody's mail? It doesn't. But you know what? Anybody that knows anything at all about what the Torah and Chazal want from us knows that this is an abhorrent thing. But since you can't legalize every single thing, right? You can't put every single behavior into the Shulchan Aruch. Right, some things are meant to be intuited by the spirit of halacha. Somebody that knows, right? And without the takon of Rabbeinu Gershom, could you imagine the Chafetz Chaim going and peeking at other people's mail? No. Why? Because he was a tzaddik, and he knew that's not something that a righteous person does. However, in a world where things not legalized and put on the books, where being a naval birshut haTorah, where you say, I'm not doing anything wrong, show me where it's usur. Right. So the fact that there was obviously some kind of rampant problem with this and he had to put on books is a tragedy.
That's right. Every line, every talk
about it. Correct. But this in particular, because it's a sign that sometimes takanot are, there's a new thing that arises and we need to close a loophole. But here, this was always anathema to what Jewish life wants. Ma Hashem, ma Doresh Hashem. What does God want from you, right? What does it mean to asita yashar v'atov beinecha, right? To do what's good and right. Anybody with eyes in his head should know you shouldn't do this. And it's a tragedy that we have to legislate it,
yeah.
Right? But sometimes you have to legislate the obvious. Okay, Chag Sameach.